Coming up on Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley, Paul has a few bones to pick with Microsoft's A/B testing policy for insiders. Mary Jo has 600 million reasons for Microsoft to celebrate. Your life will change with Sets. And I keep spoiling Paul's app pick of the week. Spoiler, it's Edge. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley. Episode number 546, recorded Wednesday, November 29th, 2017. A/B testing. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Text Expander, the productivity multiplier from Smile Software. Text Expander is a knowledge base from which you can communicate quickly and accurately using a brief search or abbreviation. Try it free for 30 days at textexpander.com/windows. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. We're just like the creators update. We've got everything that you need, even if you didn't know you needed it, and sometimes we crash your brain. I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, in for Leo Laporte, who is currently celebrating his birthday. But I get a gift because I get to play with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley for the next couple of hours. Paul, of course, is the purveyor of news, reviews, and analysis for the stars of the Windows world. And Mary Jo Foley is the gentlewoman who pilots ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog. Together, they're here to give you the news about Microsoft like the finest fish turkey. Refreshing, satisfying, with just a scent of giblets. How are you doing? It's so good to see you again.
Same. Yeah, everything's good.
Now, Paul, the last time I got to do this with the two of you, you had some major construction going on at your house. I'm assuming it's all done now.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, listen. You hear it?
The sound
nothing. Of nothing. Wow. It's the sound of nothing.
Sound of nothing. And Mary Jo, the last time I saw you, you had a cat hanging off your microphone. So this is different.
He's right there, so don't conjure him. He's sleeping on the bed. I can see him.
Do not make eye contact, Mary Jo. They can look through the little lids.
He's not looking right now.
Mary Jo,
you don't know that.
They can sense
fear. That's
sneaky. Now, of course, this is the first show back from the Thanksgiving break. I'm assuming that you did something fun, something family-oriented. Good?
Yes, I did something family-oriented.
I know. I'm thinking, are those two things always the same? Not always.
I tried the new tryptophan over TCP/IP protocol. Not so great. Is that true? Does tryptophan
does it slow down over time?
Sleep?
Is that what happens?
Yeah. I hear it every year as an excuse why people are sleepy. I think it's you just eat and you get tired, right?
Actually, the thing I remember reading one time was that there's a lot of other foods that have way more tryptophan than turkey, including stuff that you eat on Thanksgiving. But yeah, it's like, Chicago's the Windy City and Denver's the Mile High City, and turkey will always be associated with this for whatever reason.
Right. I will cop to the fact that we didn't actually cook turkey at my parents' place this year. I was going to, and my parents said, that's just too much trouble and it's too much cleanup. Let's just go out. So,
wow. Yeah. I hope to get to that point. We had 16 people at our house, and we cooked a 24-pound turkey.
Well, see, but that makes sense. If you're going to have family over, if you're going to have friends over, then, yeah, you make the turkey. But it was literally just the three of us. So,
speaking of which, it's Wednesday, right? So it is literally 7 days later, or I guess 6 days later, whatever. We had turkey for lunch.
Nice.
And we gave everybody leftovers.
That was a big turkey. 24 pounds? Yeah.
Did you fry it? Did you deep fry it? Or was this a standard?
No, my wife brines it. She cooks it right. Mm. Yeah, it's perfect.
I had a beer batter turkey once. And where they actually injected it into the turkey.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could taste any difference, but they promised me that it was the best thing they've ever done. So, okay.
Wow.
Well, we're not here to talk about turkey. We're here to talk about Windows. I think. Wait, that's right. Windows Weekly.
Two turkeys don't make a fish, that kind of thing.
No.
Ooh. Nice.
She had a furkey, so that's fine. We'll go with
that. I had a furkey. Yeah. Fish, turkey. Actually,
like a
just fokey, a fish.
I think is what you had. Like a...
But we've got a milestone. Evidently, there's a bunch of Windows devices in the world, I guess. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what this is all about, Mary Jo.
Yes. Well, until today, Microsoft have been using the number 500 million monthly active devices as their metric for how many Windows 10 machines were out in the world. But today, at the company's annual shareholders meeting, they released a new number. It's now 600 million monthly active devices. So monthly active devices means devices that have been, quote, active in the past 28 days. And it includes everything, not just PCs. There's PCs, the HoloLens, tablets, phones, Xbox, even Surface Hub is in there. So altogether, they're saying there are now 600 million monthly active devices as of today.
Yep. Now,
is that a lot?
That's interesting because of the metric that they use. So when they say active, it doesn't just mean activated. It means that they're actually detecting that people are using them.
Yeah, they're being used.
Yeah.
That's right.
Which is a good number because before they would just say, we have 600 million devices with Windows 10 on them. But you don't know. Some of those devices might not even be in active use, right? They might be something a company bought and they're in storage or in the channel. So this is a much better number. It shows you things that are actually being used on a regular basis.
Yeah. It's a very accurate number. You know, back in the day, Windows 7 certainly, I guess Windows 8 as well, before that, they would count licenses sold. And like Mary Jo said, that could be anything. You know, a company could purchase, a million licenses to Windows 7 at the time, but they might have used that to run Windows XP.
Right.
They weren't counting that. I mean, they could have, but they weren't. You know, so I think the way that they're counting this now gives us a very accurate view of where Windows 10 is and lets you compare how it's doing compared to the previous milestones because we could do some simple math to kind of figure out how well it's doing.
Yeah, it really bothered me when they were trying to count either activations or downloads.
Yeah.
Because
that was an incredibly fishy number because as some people in the chat room are pointing out, some of us have installed it multiple times.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So did they count it five
sometimes
times?
Sometimes as recently as today.
Yeah. Because my computer kept messing up every time you did an update. Does it count it when I have to do a fresh installation? But this is active users. Now, Mary Jo, didn't Microsoft once say that they would hit a billion within 2 to 3 years?
Yeah,
they did. That anymore.
Yeah.
But they did. Never happened, they did once.
Yeah. So, yeah, they did say that back in 2015. They said, they made their own metric. They said, we're going to hit 1 billion devices with Windows 10 installed as of fiscal year 2018, which means by June 2018. Then last year they said, you know what, we're not going to actually be able to do that. We're close, but we're not going to pull it off. And they never outright said, I don't think that it was because phone was a disaster, but that's pretty much why we think it ended up not happening or what could not happen. I think they were counting on Windows Phone bringing in a nice chunk of that 1 billion back in 2015. And now not so much.
Right.
I find that kind of farcical given that in 2015 it was obvious Windows Phone was going to be a disaster. But I guess in the context of phone sales, it wouldn't have been too hard to get, you know, some tens of millions of sales per quarter even, or, you know, certainly per year. So, So it was pretty much tied to them deciding to give it up on phone for sure.
It's interesting because I just went to a Microsoft technical center here in the Bay Area. And they have their display showcase down below. So they've got the mock data center. They've got the example of all the pieces of equipment that they've been able to replace with Microsoft Cloud Services. And then they've got the consumer lineup. And, of course, you've got the Surface. You've got the Xbox. And then there's a whole section dedicated to the Windows Phone. And I'm thinking,
that's really, they still have that.
Yeah, why would you still have this here? This
I'm surprised.
That's too bad.
And this is the Silicon Valley. This is not like a Blackwater ATC. This is one of their prime.
Yeah, that's surprising. I mean, even like the Microsoft flagship store in New York, that you don't see Windows phones in there now. You just see Android phones in there now.
Right. Now, Eric Duckman in the chat room, he has an interesting point. He says, let's go ahead and just beat them up because they didn't meet an arbitrary number. But the thing is, they set the arbitrary number, right?
Yeah, it's not an arbitrary number. They came out and said it. I was blown away when they did that. It's a very dangerous thing to do. They must have had some confidence in it. I almost feel like someone did the math wrong, and they came back later, and they're like, Terry, you know that number you said? Yeah, that's not happening. It was interesting that they admitted to it so quickly, right? They could have held on to this for a little while. But I guess, you know, I think the thing that would have been hanging over an announcement like today's announcement is they would have said $600 million today, and we would have been like, guys, we're two-thirds of the way through your run here, and you're only almost two-thirds. But, you know, it seems like this is going to be pretty tight. Mm-hmm. And I think Mary Jo and I think we had spoken on the show at some point about our belief that they may come pretty close to hitting it anyway. You know, when you think about it. And to give maybe some, evidence to that in a way, as I do every time they release these kind of numbers, I looked at what this means. You know, they sold 100 million, 100 million more Windows 10 PCs became active in the past 6 months is how this works out. That's about 17 million units per month, which, by the way, is some interesting good news because at the previous milestone, 500 million in May 2017, the number was 14 million units. And that suggests that maybe uptick is accelerating a little bit, which is pretty good. So if they were to do this for, the next year, I guess, that's 200 million units. That still doesn't equal a billion, obviously. And of course, mid next year is less than 1 year from now. But, you know, there's always the specter of corporate adoption changing. You know, there are the people who are taking their time, as they always do, to finally adopt Windows 10. And I feel like we're going to hit a quarter or a year or whatever it is where there's actually going to be another upswell. I expect this to go up, you know, the rate at which this thing happens at some point, just because eventually the world will have to make this adjustment. It's just a matter of timing, I guess.
Right. And it wasn't an arbitrary number. Someone at Microsoft honestly believed that they were going to hit this. They probably thought everyone on 7 is going to update because it's free. Everyone on 8.1 is going to update because it's free. And then they probably were surprised by the pushback of people saying, no, don't touch my buttons.
I think the number of people who took advantage of the free upgrade underwhelmed them or, you know, was less than they thought. I'm sure it was a lot of people, for sure. But I think they kind of expected, like, well, you know, we're going to make this thing free. The whole world's going to move. And a lot of, you know, even though they did a much better job of making that an easier process, and they really did, I think they deserve some credit for that. The notion of upgrading an operating system is still so far beyond the purview of a normal person that I confronted by this notion, I think most people are like, what are you talking about? I get that. It's like, I can get a free engine for my car, but you know, I'm just going to get a new car. You know, I'll get the new engine when I get the new car. I think that's the normal person perspective.
Yeah, I'm not so sure they were. I don't think they expected everybody to automatically upgrade, especially not businesses, right? Like they have a pretty good handle on how slow businesses upgrade. But I do think this was probably due to phones. I mean, if phones had really taken off, that would have been easy for them to hit that billion, right? I mean, that would have been.
I think
in 2015, they were still kind of delusional about their prospect in phones.
But in 2015, they began the wind down of that business.
I still think these things
happened within months of each other. You know,
I still think they thought it maybe could have done a little better than it did. And
could have done a lot better than it did.
Yeah. I still remember back in 2015 when I interviewed Terry Myerson about that number and I said to him, are you counting heavily on phones? And he was like, not heavily, but that's part of the mix. You know, like we think PCs are going to be the majority, but they definitely thought they'd get a little more leverage out of the phone.
I mean, two things to that. Supposedly there are anywhere from a billion to 1.5 billion PCs in the world. So saying that 1 billion of those are going to be on Windows 10 is like saying all of them are. That's delusional on a whole new level, right?
That's true.
There is another kind of delusion that occurs with every release of Windows where we pretend that businesses are actually going to upgrade quickly this time. And we do this, I don't mean we like you and I, but I mean, this is the story every single time. It goes back as far as businesses were running Windows, you know? Yeah. We know they've adopted Windows slowly in the past, but this time we've gotten commitments from our enterprise customers. The numbers are much better than they were before. We're going to see a much faster uptick. There'll be one or two stories about how this is actually happening, and then we quietly stop pretending that this is happening because it never happens. It just never happens. Right. It's never happened.
Well, I mean, there's no incentive. Why would an enterprise update to Windows 10 if Windows 7 is working, it's stable, everyone knows how to use it, they don't have to do any retraining? Doesn't make sense monetarily.
Microsoft has pages of marketing material that will explain why they believe people should do this. Lately, a lot of it is hinged on security, right? And you get into that weird thing. I mean, all companies do this. Apple does this when they release a new iPhone, where they have to basically say, remember that piece of junk we released last year? That stinks. You need to run this one. This is way better. It's kind of a tough argument to make, especially to the enterprise. And you're right. You know, when something just works, I would say most people, but definitely businesses, just leave it alone. You know, like, we're not going to touch this thing. It's working. Like,
Windows 7 still over 50% of all Windows market share wise?
It's going to be for a while too. Again, because the enterprise is not going to let it go until it's EOL. There's absolutely no reason for them to do it, because at the minimum, they're looking at retraining. At worst case, it's going to break some of the applications they use in-house. Yep. So they're going to hold on to it as long as possible.
Yeah. And end of support for it is 2020. Right. Every time I tweet that I'm still using Windows 7 on one of my machines, I get hammered by people. They're like, why? And I'm like, guys, it's still in full support right now. And it works just fine. I don't feel like I'm at risk.
The thing I like most about Windows 10, if I'm being honest with myself, is something you could achieve on Windows 7 fairly easily, which is just the kind of look and feel of it. I like the way it looks.
Right.
And of course, with the more recent versions, especially, they're starting to, you know, screw around with the Fluent design stuff, which I really like. I just like the look of it. I know. I know you don't see it, but if you were just into that, if that were your thing, you know, you could partway achieve it just by going to Windows 8. I mean, Windows 8.1.1 or whatever is kind of there. It's got that flat UI and all that stuff. But you could probably just use like a startup product or whatever skin type thing. If that's all you cared about. I mean, I just want Windows 7 to work. It works fine. I just want it to be pretty. It's really not that hard to achieve it. But that's just me. You know, I think for other people, you know, there might be other reasons, but I don't really run many of the apps for sure.
Yeah. For me, about half my machines in my lab are Windows 7 and the other half are Windows 10. I have nothing on 8 or 8.1 anymore. You're going to run that, you might as well run 10. But what's interesting for me is the fact that I still have use cases for each. Windows 7 is definitely better on some of the applications that I need to run in my lab than Windows 10 and vice versa. So
are they legacy applications or applications that need better performance? Or what kinds of things are we talking about?
My rendering farm is on Windows 7. Because it actually runs faster. I actually have identical boxes. So I have Windows 10 on one and Windows 7 on the other, the exact same rendering program, the exact same video cards, the exact same CUDA setup, and it will run faster on the Windows 7 box. And I don't know why, but it does. So, you know, for me, it's like, well, okay, that's a no-brainer. That one stays on 7. And it's weird that that happens, because there's supposed to be all these performance enhancements in Windows 10 that kind of gum up the works for me a little bit. Again, that's super specialized. That's just me. But I have to think that there are other people in that same boat.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's always some weird specialized line of business legacy app for people. You know, they're like, that one thing that I developed, I can't, you know, get it to work or whatever. You hear that a lot. You still hear from people who say, I don't like the telemetry stuff in Windows 10. Right. No matter what Microsoft does there, they're never going to win everybody over on that.
But I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here. No. Windows 10 has actually worked out really well, aside from the fact that they set a number that they never could have hit. The rollout has been fantastic. I mean, if you look at it objectively, the fact that they've got 600 million computers, the fact that you also reported that, a fifth of all those machines are now on the latest update. That's unheard of in the Windows world. Microsoft definitely deserves kudos for that, right?
Yes. I mean, I think it's fair to say that there have been some ups and downs, you know, with the updating process. That 20% number, the one-fifth of all Windows 10 machines are running on the fall creators update, is a faster uptick than the previous release. at this point in time, right? About a month, month and a half into the run. So that's good, you know, for sure. You know, Microsoft has a goal explicitly stated that they want everyone on the most recent version. And they know that they can't really do that, that a lot of businesses are going to run on a version that might be even two or three versions old. But, you know, it's still better than, you know, having XP 7 and 8 out in the world or whatever. I don't know. I feel like with every feature update, which is what these things are, the big updates that come twice a year, there's always the chance for some kind of big problem. And we did have that issue with the anniversary update, which is about a year and a half ago.
That broke all my
they had
drivers.
A bunch of problems. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that.
But, you know, we're sitting here now on two subsequent feature updates, and it looks like, you know, they may have gotten ahead of it. I mean, it seems like we haven't had any major issues.
I have noticed, because I am Fall Creators Update on all my Win 10 boxes.
Yeah.
They're slightly less stable. I never blue screened in Windows 10 prior to the update.
That's interesting.
And now I'm blue screening about once every 2 weeks, and you know, that's not acceptable.
Yeah. Well, one thing to remember is we're all guinea pigs for Fall Creators Update, right? Like, it still has not been designated as the current branch for business or whatever they're calling that now. But they keep renaming everything. So, you know, once they do that, which usually happens about, I think, 4 months after it starts rolling out to consumers, that's when it's deemed more stable. But right now, every one of us who has Fall Creators Update, we're testers, basically.
Right.
Whether we want to acknowledge that or not. That's the way the rollouts are scheduled now.
Right.
We're just a big pool of testers.
I mean, everyone who uses Windows 10 is some level of tester, right?
Yeah, right.
Obviously, they have the people who go into this knowing they're testing, like the insiders. And then, like you said, there are the people who are on the production ring or whatever, which are basically the slower ring, you know?
Yeah.
And they're also updating apps all the time, just like we see on mobile. And that introduces its own form of instability. Or can, I should say. I would say by and large, that's been pretty good. But yeah, it's a lot of change, a lot. And it happens fairly regularly. And that alone is a brave new world for Windows. You know, it's a little strange.
Yeah, I think the two things that I've enjoyed the most out of the Fall Creators Update is the mixed reality, because I have been using that actually quite heavily. It's fun and it's easy to develop for. So just keep that in the back of your mind. The other thing is, and this is a feature I've wanted for the longest time, is better configurability of my OneDrive settings. I was really tired.
That's definitely the big thing for this version.
Yeah.
Because everyone uses it, right?
Yeah. Well, this is going to be very hard. I'm not going to try to explain this very well because it's just difficult to do via voice. But if you are used to how OneDrive has worked since Windows 10 came out, in order to take best advantage of it, you have to kind of go against your in, you know, built-in training and check a box that used to mean something very different.
Right.
If you can get over that little stumbling block, you will gain complete access to all of your OneDrive contents when you're online and then be able to mix and match between online and offline pretty seamlessly. It's really nice. It's basically the placeholders feature from Windows 8.1, but done right. You know, it's just, I wish there was a better UI for it. I mean, I almost feel like they need a switch up in the file explorer that turns offline files on and off, you know, the view, just make it explicit. Cause it's hard to explain, like I said, but the way, when you go to manage the folders that are synced, most people have or it's possible you have a lot more stuff up in OneDrive than you have space for on your actual hard drive. And in the past, clicking that box would be a huge mistake. A huge mistake.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on the road all the time. And unfortunately, I keep my old Outlook PST files in OneDrive. And I always had to remember, if I'm on the road, do not sync. Because if it starts syncing 15 gigabytes worth of data, I just blew through my cap.
Yeah.
And now I can. There's a very, very well-made configuration panel that says, hey, you know what? Keep these in the cloud and make them accessible to me, but they do not sync. You do not sync these regularly.
By the way, you just raised another issue, which is interesting. You're talking about over like a cellular connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Windows has the notion of metered connections, obviously, but what it doesn't have is a, I don't believe, I don't, I've never seen it, is a way to check a box that says do not sync OneDrive over a metered connection for that very reason, right? You have to, you can right click on the OneDrive icon. I know you're thinking like it must, but I don't believe it does. You can pause syncing.
Yeah, I know. I used to pause syncing, but I think the new, the Fall Creators update actually has the metered connections. It tells you it's not going to sync OneDrive.
I've got to look because that's something
that would
really
be good
need.
If yeah. it is true.
Yep. Right. Yep. Unfortunately, I mean, you should be able to just hit the Windows key and type metered, but no, you have to go into the network settings and then the adapter settings.
Well, you can, but then you still have to find it. Yeah.
Change Wi-Fi settings.
I know. We're doing like the same exact
thing. I know. We're all
like, where is it?
All right. So you can make this a metered connection. It's not, I don't see anything in here about OneDrive.
Oh.
And of course, if I make this a metered connection, my Skype will just drop off.
Right. So let's not do that.
Yeah. I don't believe there is. I mean, okay. I'm not, I don't know every single switch in Windows, but I'm working on it. But you can pause syncing. And to me, those things need to be related. Like there should be a whole slew of things you might want to do differently on a metered connection. And absolutely syncing OneDrive is one of those things.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a few things and they're slowly figuring it out. I mean, with the changes that they've made to OneDrive, I think they are actually listening to people. It's just the feature rollout may be a little slower than some of us were hoping for.
Yeah.
They finally really and truly enabled metering on Ethernet connections, which I like because that's, you know, that was one of the big glaring things about the metered connections in previous versions of Windows 10, which is, well, it's not just Wi-Fi where I might be bandwidth limited.
Exactly.
So that's nice. Although it's now been this year, it's four times that I've been caught just before a show, Windows 10 decides that it's going to do an update and it's not going to let me
show up.
So, yay.
No, we've all been bit by this kind of thing. I think I don't remember what it was. I don't know if it was app download. No, it was an ebook download I did over cellular, and it was like 600 megabytes or something. And it was like, wait, what? what just happened? You know,
that is kind of fun. Every once in a while, I'll get a notification on my phone that
I'm getting close.
Yeah, I've just hit my cap. I'm like, wait, what just happened? Yeah.
Then you go and look, see what it was. And it's always something stupid. It's not like you were doing something like, yeah, I know that. I did this thing. It was important. Right. I needed to do it. It's always like, oh, I downloaded a movie? You know, whatever. Yeah.
Well, of course, naturally. Yeah. Let's go ahead and move on to something that's fun, and that is new features. I'm always happy with new features. And I know, Mary Jo, you actually wrote an article about what the testers are going to be seeing, which means what the rest of us will be seeing sometime in the near future. Is this a fast ring?
Yeah. So, this is a little bit complicated. So Microsoft kind of got burned by promising which new features would show up when. Last year, they showed off in March at Build this feature called Timeline and made it appear when they showed it to us that it would be in the Fall Creators Update. It never made it into the Fall Creators Update. And now it's going to be in the next fast ring test build that goes out, which will be either Friday this week or sometime next week. Donna Sarkar tweeted today, no fast ring builds today or tomorrow. So Timeline is a feature that everybody was super excited about when they showed it to us at Build. It basically is an extension of Task View, and it shows users activities they've done in the past and gives them cards that let them more quickly re-engage with applications that they were using. So that's pretty cool. Timeline's cool. But then they also talked this week about Sets, which is just a temporary name for a new feature that they're going to be adding to Windows 10 at some point that lets you group everything in tabs in a window. It's a Windows management kind of a tool. Mm-hmm. If you know what Stardock Groupy is that Stardock introduced last week, it's very similar to that. So Sets is cool because it's going to let you have tabs for everything. They're going to start with UWP applications, but you can, using Sets, you'll be able to combine a UWP app and a website and other things into a single window with tabs. So it's going to be like you're working with tabs in one window instead of a whole bunch of different windows that you have to jump between. So they are not promising when you will see sets show up. It might be Redstone 4 in March 2018. It might be later if it's not all ready to go, I guess. But the thing that got people a little bit angry this week, some people, I will say, is that the way they're going to test sets is they're going to roll it out in a phased approach to insiders. So instead of everybody in the fast ring getting sets at the same time, Microsoft is going to have a control group that gets sets first. Then they're going to look at the feedback from that. And then they're going to broaden the rollout of it over time and until everybody in the fast ring finally gets it and it progresses through the rings in the regular fashion. Now I'm going to let Paul rant. I have to get my gong while this happens.
No, I'm not going to rant. Actually, before I get to the rant or the commentary, I just wanted to say that, well, I guess this is also commentary. A couple of things about sets. First of all, I think this is an awesome idea. This answers a problem that Windows has where there's a power user feature called virtual desktops, which normal people will never find and will never use if they do find.
Do you ever use it, by the way?
No.
Virtual desktops. No,
I don't.
So you're a power user and you don't even use it.
No, because you can't save workspaces, right? If I could create a developer workspace out of my developer tools, a reading workspace, whatever it was, it would be very interesting to be able to switch back and forth between those things. You can create them on the fly, but then when you reboot, they just go away. So to me, this is kind of a non-starter. Some people will sort of do this functionality across multiple screens, right? You can do like physical displays, of course. And there is some saving of window position there. And so that is maybe a little more elegant. But I feel like virtual desktops just don't work, basically. Mm-hmm. And sets is a more approachable, simpler kind of version of that organization. And because it's modern now and it works with this pick up where you left off stuff that Microsoft is kind of doing across the board, there is a sense of being able to return to some workspace that has, in this case, the various application, I guess, tabs, not windows, but tabs that you were working on before as a group. You know, if you're a student working on a project or you're someone like us who's a reporter working on a story or whatever, you might have different tabs of things that aren't all browser windows. Some of them are in OneNote, some of them are in Word, you know, whatever it is.
Notepad.
Well, no, actually, this is the problem. The negative part of sets is that it's only for store apps.
Right.
Not forever, though.
Okay. It is okay. I mean, I hope so. But the Groupie tool that you were talking about from Stardex supports desktop applications, right? So obviously it's possible. I like this idea a lot.
Okay. So we got a briefing about sets a while ago when Joe Belfiore was in New York. We weren't supposed to say that he talked to us, but I've seen it in every story, so I can now feel like I can say it as well.
Okay, how exciting.
So he said when I asked, is it UWP apps or store apps only? He said initially that's how sets will work, but he said we are definitely going to have full 132 apps be supported. And we're trying to work out how, and we're starting to do some work with the Office team to figure out how that would look with Office first. And our question is, once we do it with our own apps like Office and Notepad and all, how do we do it with third-party apps that have their own toolbars and make it look good? So they could just take. I know. Yeah. So they did. They do have this idea that they could just do it and not really care what it looks like and hope that the developers will fix the apps. But I think they're hoping for a more elegant approach where they would work with developers to make it so that their apps work with sets. So, you know, this is going to happen in phases, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess my point, though, is that store apps will natively support this and will look good. And just because of the nature of the window borders, you see there's nothing crazy going on with store apps. Yeah. And so, like, that's, I'm sure V1 is going to be just that, you know?
Yeah, it will.
So the drama, one of the things I really like about the Windows Insider program is it's kind of egalitarian. You know, you can join, you can specify the level to which you want to be involved, and you get the stuff. And I've had complaints in the past, for example, that there'll be a 1 month period before a new version of Windows 10 ships where suddenly the people are in the fast ring, which is essentially the fastest release time frame for new releases, Don't get the latest versions of apps because they want those people to test the apps that are going to ship in the box with that version of Windows. See, I have a problem with that because that's not what they signed up for.
Right. You're changing the game after they've started.
What's that?
You've changed the games, the rules of the games. After
In other words, I signed on to this because you're promising me the fastest. And now for a little while, you're going to change that for only part of the operating system because you want something. And to me, this is a give and take. You're getting feedback. You accept it, whatever it is. You do it through some established set of rules. So that's a little issue. It's a temporary thing. You know, it happens twice a year, whatever. I complain about it every time. That's the way I am. But on the flip side, Microsoft has an Xbox Insider program, and they've always screwed this thing up. It's terrible. And it's nothing like the Windows Insider program, although they've been changing it over time to be a little bit more like the Windows Insider program. And the way it was originally envisioned, if you did get in the top two tiers or rings or whatever that program, whatever they were called, they've changed the names. You had to be secretly voted in. It was like a secret society. It was basically like you had to know somebody on the Xbox team to get into it. There was no way you as a normal person were really going to get into this thing. And that's what they're doing with this sets thing. And I don't like it because someone who signs up for the fast ring is signing up to test this exact kind of thing, a future feature, blah, 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 whatever. They already have an established ring system that for this testing. They even have something called skip ahead, which would be perfect for this. They could put sets in the skip ahead. Skip ahead is just Fast Ring plus plus or whatever, however you want to say it. They did close the, they've limited the amount of people who can get into skip ahead, and now you can't join. But they could turn that on again. It's easy enough. That's how they should do it. There are people who want to test this that now might arbitrarily not get it, and that's not what they signed up for. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You might not get it right off the bat, but you will get it. It might be days, it might be weeks, we don't know, right?
Yeah, okay, but I mean, that's like, yeah. I mean, I might get it when it finally ships in Windows too. It doesn't mean I want to wait that long. I mean, if you're going to put your PC or PCs on the line and be part of the Insider program and provide feedback to Microsoft or whatever, I mean, I think it kind of stinks that for this one feature, they're like, yeah, you're not going to get it.
I see that. I'm with Paul on that just because, I mean, okay. I am sacrificing, and I know I'm sacrificing a little bit of system stability. I'm testing something for Microsoft. I am essentially offering Microsoft a service. The service that I expect back is early access. That's the deal, right?
This is kind of a minor issue, but consider my problem with this personally, which is that I'm a reviewer and I want to have immediate access to this so I can write about it. If I arbitrarily don't get this and Tom Warren over at The Verge does get it and someone over at Neowin gets it or whatever, then I'm screwed. And that's unfair. Yeah. And I know that's a little thing.
I think a lot of the people I saw complaining the loudest were reporters. And I understand why, for the reason you just said. But I think you have to also look at what you guys were just saying is, why did I become an insider? And people became insiders for a lot of different reasons, right? Like some people became insiders because they want to be in the know and like lord it over other people and be like, hey, I saw that and you didn't see it. There are people like that. You are not that person. But I think I should also say I am not an insider. And the reason I'm not is because I don't want to run unstable builds. I just don't have the time or the interest to try to help with that. But I think if you are an insider, you kind of are doing this hopefully also because you want to make Windows better, right? And if you do want to make Windows better, you have to believe that Microsoft looked at how they are rolling this out and they would have liked to have used the ring system, I'm sure. But there is some reason they aren't using it. And I don't think we are totally privy to why, but I think
part of the problem.
I think if you are an insider, you have to say, okay, my real goal is to try to make Windows better for me and all the other users. Okay, and so I'm going to go with what they're doing here because there's a reason they're doing it.
The problem I have with that is that what they've come out with, which is not, I don't think the real reason, but it doesn't matter what my opinion is we're doing A/B testing. And A/B testing is well established in the software development world and it works and here's why it works and blah, blah, blah. The people they're telling that to are, many of them, developers who understand how software A/B testing works, and they don't appreciate being lectured by someone who has just changed the rules of the program that they joined so they could help and provide feedback. It just creates kind of a tough dynamic. And the interchanges we saw on Twitter were
ugly.
Not polite.
If you go back and look at the two blog posts that were written about this, mm-hmm. neither of them use the words A/B testing.
Unfortunately,
then in subsequent conversations on Twitter, Donna did use the word A/B testing, and I think some other people did too. So I think that got people more riled who understand understand A/B testing. Yeah.
I think what happened was these guys, Donna and so forth, I think they went into it knowing they were going to get a lot of pushback. And so they were kind of defensive to start, which is completely understandable. I don't understand how these people can deal with the world the way they do anyway. It's amazing.
Me too.
seriously, I have my own experiences certainly, but the Microsoft language in the Terry Myerson letter referred to this as a controlled study, which is you know the type of thing we do to like albino mice. You know, it's like
you're in the control group.
I'm also going to tell you something you don't want to hear. This isn't the only feature this is going to happen to.
Right.
This is going to happen in the future more. I don't think this is a one-off thing.
I'm sure you're right. Although the pushback here, we'll see. You know, they are perhaps overly inclined to answer everyone's needs. Yeah. You know,
I know.
I mean, the very existence of Windows 10 today is in many ways a turn your feedback into actual features. You know, like they're super interested in making sure everyone has something in Windows that they love. Which, you know, you could argue is resulting in a Frankenstein's monster of nonsense, but it was a tough little interchange, and
it was. I have to tell you, I was taken aback at people's reaction, because when Joe told me, and I think he also told the same thing to others, obviously, they were like waiting to see if I was going to push back, and I'm like, yeah, okay. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal.
Mary Jo feels good about it. I say we just do it. So it was your fault.
I'm sure they don't.
Mary Jo is the reason.
I am not even an insider.
I'm sure when they told Peter Bright, he freaked out because he would. And he's insane. Let's see what Mary Jo thinks. And you were the deciding vote.
No, you know what? Look, if you look at Peter Bright on Twitter yesterday, he was defending it. He was defending the whole A/B testing thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, I don't think they're going to change this, even though people screamed. It was a pretty bad reaction by at least a lot of the people I follow on Twitter.
It was ugly. Yeah,
it was ugly. And I think they're going to go forward with it. And maybe one day they'll just say, okay, more people hated it than didn't. Or maybe they'll just see, like, there is a vociferous contingent who hates it, but the majority are like, okay, you guys are doing this for whatever reason, I'm in.
And that's going to happen anytime you change a program. But I mean, the thing is, they're alienating some of the people who were giving them the best feedback.
Thank you. That's exactly right. The people who care the most about this product and the company are the very ones who are going to be alienated by this move. And that should be obvious to anybody. It's astonishing to me that they didn't think of this and handle it.
I didn't think of it. So
no, but that, I mean, come on, they get so much negative feedback.
I know
they had to have seen this one coming. It astonishes me to think that they might not have known this was going to happen.
I think like Padre said, whenever you change something, people scream about it, right? Like people hate change. And I think,
well, no, but I feel like it's like a contract. You can't just change it midstream, you know, without any, I mean, you know, we signed up for a reason, and you've just told me that I'm going to be controlled out. I mean, how did you decide? How am I not in the control group? I'm giving you all this great feedback. I mean, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be the day that this feature comes out, he's going to say, I have submitted 589 pieces of feedback. It's been upvoted X thousand number of times. I did not get this feature. That means that this thing is arbitrary. That means you screwed me over and I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. Dear Apple, what kind of computers do you sell? I'm being dramatic, but I mean, these people will be dramatic.
I know. This or they'll just, I saw Donna say to a couple of people, you know, like if you really hate what we're doing, maybe you shouldn't be an insider.
By the way, a great thing to say to an insider on Twitter. I mean, no, seriously. And I understand the frustration. I mean, it's amazing to me that Donna and people like Donna do not freak out on people more often. I would be incapable of doing this job.
Same. Me too.
I can barely have a conversation without
100%.
Food.
100%. Yep.
And I like you guys.
I don't know. I used the crying baby face a couple times yesterday when I saw people freaking out. Nice. I'm like, what? No,
I'm like, okay. I get it. This is part and parcel of the whole enthusiast world. I mean, it's emotional for these guys.
Yeah. And you know what?
You know, it's tough.
You've got Raphael in your corner, man. You know he can figure this out. If you happen to not be in the control
maybe
group.
That's, I should have added that to my article. Yeah, don't think for 1 second that Raphael and people like Raphael aren't going to figure out how to get that feature down to your computer.
They will. They're already getting features. They're finding features in every build that people haven't even announced, right? Like every single build, this happens.
We need a new generation of insiders. Insiders who don't remember the old program, who are now joining, realizing that they're going to be controlled. So if you're one of those people, come on over.
Come on in.
Now, actually, Mary Jo, I do have a couple of questions about sets.
Yeah.
Can we get back to the feature set in just a bit? I think we need to take a break, a really quick break.
Okay, I do too.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a deep breath. Purge all the angst. If you're an insider, Microsoft still loves you. They just want to compare your love against someone else's. But let's take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly. Now, folks, everyone's looking for a competitive advantage in business, especially in the business that we're in here, in the media. But anytime you need to present yourself, anytime you need to write, anytime you need to reach out to a mass audience, you need tools. You need the right tools to help you do that right. And that's why we're so happy to have Text Expander by Smile Software as a sponsor of Windows Weekly. Now, Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. Let's say you get home for a conference. You've got a collection of new contacts, all those business cards, and you want to follow up. You create a Text Expander snippet with your follow-up message. Then you use fill-in fields for the contact name and a custom topic. Then blow through your repetitive tasks in minutes instead of hours. You can share your snippets with colleagues and everyone gets work done faster. For example, you could have a generic snippet about who you are and the company that you represent. That's the power and the magic of shared snippets. And just one example of what your team can do to communicate smarter with Text Expander. Now, you can see on the screen here right now that what we're doing, I've got some basic snippets set up for this week in tech. And as I start to type the keyword, it just automatically fills in everything for me. Because there's going to be certain paragraphs, certain phrases, certain descriptions that everyone at Twit is going to be using over and over and over again. Now, we can either reinvent those paragraphs and reinvent that information every time we type it, or we could take the easy, more efficient way out with Text Expander. Now, Text Expander subscriptions include software for Windows, for Mac, iPad, and iPhone. And on average, Text Expander users save 2 to 4 hours per month, and active users save twice as much. You can never type the same email address, chunk of text, brand message, cache phrase, directions, or disclaimer again. Just let Text Expander do it for you. And it'll do it across platforms. It'll do it on social media. It will do it in your email. It will do it in snail mail letters. You'll also have access to public groups, which are ready-made batches of snippets free to use. Folks, if you want to work smarter instead of harder, try Text Expander by Smile Software. Recall your best words instantly and repeatedly. Try Text Expander free for 30 days at textexpander.com/windows. That's textexpander.com/windows. And we thank the folks at Smile for their support of Windows Weekly. Now, Mary Jo, okay, so getting back to sets, I'm with Paul on this. I was very excited for virtual desktops until I realized that there was no persistence or very little persistence. Mm. I wanted to set up a virtual desktop for video editing and one for programming and maybe one for 3D design. And I wanted all my different files and all my different software to be ready to pop up. And that's just not how it ended up working. Mm. Sets can do that for software. And eventually it will do it for non-UWP software. But can I also pile, say, files into different sets? Or no, that's not part of the feature set.
I believe you will be able to. But I'm not 100% sure. And, you know, one interesting thing I didn't talk about that's related to persistence is I think they're going to integrate sets with Timeline so that you'll be able to pull up a set from your
like
Timeline.
10 days ago or that's something.
Nice. Yeah, which will be cool.
Yeah.
I believe files. I know with Groupy from Stardock, you can combine a lot of different kinds of content into a tabbed window. Groupie actually, Paul joked and he said Microsoft should talk to them. Microsoft should talk to them. I mean, they're bringing Groupie to Windows 7, Windows 8.1. They also have figured out a way to bring Chrome into the equation, which Microsoft may not want. You know, they may want to try to keep it all Edge websites and web content, but I think Groupie's got some jumps on what Microsoft's talking about with Sets, to be honest.
Yep. Plus it works on other versions of Windows.
Right.
It does. Yeah. It's not integrated with the OS like Sets is going to be, but I mean, they've got a lot of other things that are pretty interesting coming to Groupie. Yep.
So how would this work on a mobile device? I've created my Sets. I've got, say, three sets of applications / software / files. And now I'm using it on a different desktop, a different laptop, or a tablet. Do my Sets just automatically come down, or how do I make that happen?
Right.
I have no idea.
The UI is not clear.
No.
But there is, you know, in the video they show a way that you open, I think, one of the applications that was in a set on a different computer, and you get a little notification. You can bring it up there. There are different ways to do this, and I don't know exactly how timeline works, but I think Mary Jo, I think she's right. It's going to be part of a timeline thing because your timeline is not just this PC; it's multiple PCs.
But you know, I wonder about
my house just clicked. So if I disappear, it's electrical. I don't know what that was.
Suddenly you're in complete darkness.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the lights flick.
No, we saw that.
Yep. Yeah. What about Sets though on phones? Like, does that, there must be a way, right?
Not yet. So all of these features, if you think all of these kind of cross device features that Microsoft has in the Fall Creators Update and is working on for the next update are unidirectional right now. They let you go from the phone to the PC. To my knowledge, there is no, it's not completely true, but there's no good way to go from the PC to the phone. Actually, the exception to that is Cortana, obviously, because Cortana has an app everywhere. It's not technically from app to app because Cortana is in the cloud. But if you think about, I'm reading a web article on my phone. It doesn't matter if I'm using Chrome or Safari or Edge. And I'd really like to read this on my tablet or my computer. You can do a continue on PC thing. It's pretty seamless in Edge. It's not so seamless in the other browsers, but it's possible. On your PC, Edge opens up. Doesn't matter what your default browser is. That's kind of what you were talking about earlier, you know, tying it to Edge. And you can read it on your computer. And that's neat, you know. From your computer, though, you can't be reading something in Edge and say, now I want to go read this on my phone. You can use a read it later type service. And Edge actually does have something like that built into it. You could use Pocket, obviously, or whatever. But I think the PC to phone bit is something that will come, right? Because it's so obvious. And this should be part of it because we have fairly capable phones now. I mean, I don't necessarily want to bring up, and it would be hard to duplicate this, but a set of specific Windows 10 apps on an Android phone. But being able to bring up a document so I could read it is an obvious capability. It's sort of there if you're using OneDrive and, you know, there are ways around it, but you could see the need to be able to do that. It would be nice to be able to browse through your timeline on an Android phone and pick out the one thing that you wanted to read on the train on your phone or whatever, and maybe do a little bit of triaging too. So I think that will happen. But we don't have a lot of information about that yet.
Would this drive Edge? Is this a killer feature for Edge? A reason why people would finally say, okay, that's a browser worth my time.
So I have Edge as an app.
They hope so. Right?
Yeah, let's save that one because I have some ideas around that for later. Yeah.
Okay.
For later? Wait, you can't tease me like that. What are your ideas for that?
I have Edge as an app pick for later in the show, Padre. Oh. You will accept this ruling.
Okay. I got that. It's just enough of a whetting of the appetite. Will I be able to run?
I want to throw one more thing into this conversation. So another reason, not reason so much, but the reason Microsoft's doing a lot of these productivity features the way they are, things like timeline and sets, I think it goes back to the whole pick up where you left off idea. And the concept that they introduced at Build is they want to keep the PC as part of your computing equation in some way because they know people are doing more and more of their computing on mobile devices and they don't have a mobile phone. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how much of Sets and how much of timeline they do let you do on phones and how much you have to come back to the PC. Right.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So let me give you. All right. Let me give you part of the idea that I have, because it does relate to what you just said. And it's the problem for Microsoft is that people go down this mobile road, they get sucked into those ecosystems because everything works seamlessly if you stick within that thing. And so that thing could be Apple apps and Apple services on an iPhone. And, you know, you might just say, look, if I just buy a Mac, that stuff goes seamlessly between those things. I can't, the handoff or whatever the feature is. They have a bunch of stuff for cross-device interoperability. If you stick within the Chrome ecosystem, and you could use a Chromebook and all your stuff is on Chrome, it syncs to Chrome, it's always in Chrome. You have Chrome on your phone, you get that kind of cross-device functionality. How do you enable that if you're Microsoft, when you don't control a mobile platform? You have to create apps and kind of hope that people download and use them, right? It's kind of lousy when you think about it. If you're a Microsoft guy, or if you exist largely in a Microsoft ecosystem on the PC, there are a lot of apps you can download and install on your mobile device that will enable these kinds of things. And obviously Cortana and Edge and the Microsoft Office apps and, you know, all kinds of other things. Microsoft Launcher, which is kind of a real Microsoft-centric way to get access to your OneDrive-based data, your Microsoft apps, and that Continuum PC functionality we were just talking about. So, yeah, I think the key is, like, how do you get it there, you know, and how do you get someone to do it? And so, not to blow my Edge thing for later, but, I mean, the one thing that's really interesting, one of the things that's really interesting about that browser on mobile is how seamless that stuff becomes. It's much better than the experience of doing it from Chrome or Safari, because they can build it right into the product.
Yeah.
They don't have to do like a kind of a share-based workaround kind of thing.
I go with that. You know, I think if Microsoft's strategy here is to essentially use Edge as my virtual desktop, I would be down for that. I mean, if I can run Chrome as a tab inside of Sets...
you're not going to be able to, though. not right away.
Yeah.
Not right away, but I mean, eventually they're going to be accepting that, right?
So, I mean, think through this for a second. You have there's a timeline feature coming, and the timeline feature is going to show you all the stuff you worked on. It's going to be documents and apps and open Windows sets and blah, blah, probably all kinds of things. And you'll be able to go back in time, and you'll be able to go back in time and look at those things across devices. You know, like you can kind of access like the history of another browser from another PC, that kind of thing. How do you do that on mobile if you're Microsoft? Like, where would you put that UI? Right. I would argue that, well, A, Microsoft Launcher, obviously, but you can't rely on the fact that everyone uses it and some people have iPhones. So where are you going to put it?
Cortana?
It's a tough question. I think the answer is probably Cortana.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, I will say that this stuff is exposed in different ways in different Microsoft apps. If you look across... like Word Mobile or OneNote, OneDrive or that Microsoft Launcher or Edge or whatever. There are kind of versions of this stuff everywhere. And it's almost like maybe they have to put it everywhere, you know? When you go to OneDrive, for example, you can access a list of your recently accessed documents. When you go to Word, you can access a list of your recently accessed documents. In that case, they're all Word documents. Does it make sense to have that in both places? Yes. Does it make sense to have this timeline/sets thing available in everywhere? Yeah, probably. That makes it complicated.
I could see it being included as part of a feature set upgrade for OneDrive, because it does kind of fit in. It's an application that I'm probably going to install on my device, no matter what it is, iOS.
Yeah, Android, like all Windows. Those documents will be available in OneDrive. It makes sense to That's a good point. Yep.
Yeah. Mary Jo, will you be setting?
Definitely, I will be setting. I really like the idea. When I saw the concept, I'm like, oh, you know what? Right now, you're always switching between windows when you're trying to assemble a story or look up a bunch of things. And you're like, okay, I have all these Chrome tabs over here. Now I'm using Word. Now I'm using Notepad. Now I'm using this. It's like, you know? So I think it could make my life a lot easier.
I also think that this could be the future of what I want to call like a Windows 10S/Windows 10 on ARM/whatever, tablet mode, full screen, blah, blah, blah. Instead of Windows, we're thinking of tabs. In other words, it's multiple full screen experiences that we can navigate between with a keyboard or, you know, with swiping and so forth. And, you know, we're looking at it like tabs and windows and stuff, because that's the old school UI. But I think one of the other issues with a legacy system like Windows is that it's kind of old fashioned. You know, it's the desktop metaphor is 40 years old or whatever. And where we're still kind of, we do things through an almost tradition-based rationale rather than thinking through what's the most efficient way to do this. And, you know, power users are going to freak out because they want things the way they are. But this might ultimately really benefit normal people. And, you know, there have been some semi-successful, less than successful attempts at bringing mobile UX to Windows over the years. I mean, I think this thing compared, or I should say combined with some of the work they've already done around tablet mode and continuum and full screen apps and whatever is kind of a, how do we make something that's simpler than Chrome OS but has all the power of Windows? Oh, well, this could be a big part of it.
Now, you know where I want them to take this. I would love the ability to share a set, to create my perfect desktop for a particular work set and then share it with a colleague and say, hey.
That's an excellent feature because people collaborate in those apps. A lot of the word, the Office apps have collaboration, real-time collaboration features. That would,
I mean, that makes sense.
Especially if it's all UWP apps. I share a set with somebody and it will automatically download those apps to their desktop.
You're almost guaranteed to have those things. And if you don't, you can get them easily from the start.
Yeah. There you go.
I did ask about progressive web apps when I talked to Joe because I'm like, okay, how does progressive web apps fit in with this whole tabbed app strategy? And I didn't really get an answer on that.
I can actually answer that based on what they told me about how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
The store apps. So they'll fit right in.
Right. Because you got a progressive web app could be a store app, right?
They will be store apps in Windows 10.
Yeah.
So
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Let's.
And then. One more interesting tidbit that fits in here. Yep. Sorry.
No, go.
Because we're kind of trying to piece this together ourselves because we only know little bits and pieces about it. But when I asked about, where is all this stuff stored, right? Like when you save a set, where is it? Like what's saved to the cloud?
And that's so funny.
Joe said it's actually stored in the Microsoft Graph. The Microsoft Graph is that centralized API that Microsoft is tying everything to. So, you know, Office is tied to it. Windows is tied to it. So there's some connection with the Microsoft Graph in all of this on the back end with sets.
Okay. That's interesting. And it also speaks to what Padre was saying earlier about sharing workspaces, because that would be an incredible enterprise feature.
It
was.
There is a, I don't want to get off like down this separate rabbit hole, but there is a whole set of, I don't know what you want to call them, settings or things that are stored on your behalf that are related to your Microsoft account, your Office 365 account that you don't have any access to, right? They're just there. There's no front end for that stuff. There's no way to say, I don't want that there anymore. I don't want to change what it says or whatever. And this kind of thing, I thought what you were going to say was, he was going to say, well, it's in OneDrive, but you don't have any way to access it, which is what a lot of this stuff, other stuff is. And so that's interesting.
Yeah.
Microsoft Graph. I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting, though, and also kind of pulls everything together because more and more every Microsoft app and service is tied to the Microsoft Graph.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And it maybe the Microsoft Graph is going to enable, man, I'm all over the map today, but maybe they're going to enable a kind of a modern version of that inter-app communication stuff that started in the 1990s, like the Olay type stuff or whatever, where apps that are,
I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, but cloud-based Olay, right? Colay, as we'll call it.
Colay.
You know, where you have this notion of, you know, it's like modern copy and paste, essentially. Right? That might need to be part of the system, you know.
Well, now you've got my appetite whetted and I can't get it.
Right.
I know.
Not yet.
And when you're A/B tested out of this, you will understand my frustration.
No. If they were going to do real A/B testing, they would have different versions of sets.
Yes.
And just
thank you.
Send the bad one over here.
The people who argued that this is not A/B testing, that was one of the arguments they correctly made. Exactly right.
So you're going to get the lousy version of sets and you're going to go, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And then you say, yes, you just approved. You proved the experiment. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. What do you call, what's the medicine that you, that's not really medicine.
Oh, placebo.
I want the placebo version of sets.
We call it sets, but it's actually just Edge. And it has none of that
functionality.
Why does it look just like Edge? It has tabs. Shut up and use it.
All right, let's move away from sets and talk about something that I can put in a set Yes. Microsoft's got a new photo companion app. Do I need a new photo companion app?
Yeah. So there are two. Actually, these aren't really that related, are they? Apparently, getting photos off a phone is too difficult for some people. So Microsoft is creating a photos companion app for mobile devices. In other words, you can plug your phone into your computer and get that stuff off. So that's fine. I have to say, I don't know. You guys use Android phones, right? Both of you?
Do you have an iPhone?
Okay. So you understand that when you plug in an Android phone to your computer and you want to transfer photos from it, you have to go through this weird series of steps where you bring down the notification shade, you scroll to the bottom, you find a thing that says what USB is doing, you tap on it, and when in Oreo or later, it's an extra tap, but whatever. And then this menu comes up. And if you're normal, you will spend about 15 minutes staring at this menu wondering which one you should choose because the choices are kind of strange, some of them. And you choose transfer files, for example, and you can transfer files. My assumption is that they're trying to avoid that kind of confusion, that they want to make that kind of thing easier. But the idea here is that you plug in your phone, you get the pictures come down to your computer. That's cool.
To be fair, though, mm-hmm. Maybe Android power users will transfer directly from their phone because they want the full resolution. But most users of Android will just allow it to sync with Google Photos because that's unlimited storage. And then they pull it from Google Photos.
It's unlimited storage if you
take the reduced resolution
down to the end. So to what I feel, by the way, is a very acceptable level. But my advice for people with phones, which is everybody, is to do that with at least two services. There's no penalty for doing that. I use OneDrive and Google Photos. You could use three, I guess, if you wanted to. It would work. I agree that's a better way to do it. We live in kind of a first world situation here. So I did this today. I do this all the time. I will take a picture of a product and then I will go to Google Photos on my computer and I will download it from the cloud, right? Instead of physically connecting the two devices. A lot of people can't do that. And, if you're like, you could be on a metered connection like we were talking about, where that thing, unless you change it, won't back up to the cloud on a metered connection. And you just, you're out in the world and you want to get those photos for whatever reason. You want to edit them, share them, whatever it is. So I don't know. I don't want to say it's necessary because it's not necessary, but it's a nicety and it's probably not a horrible idea.
Well, for me, I think this app might replace my OneDrive synchronization because right now, anytime my phone gets within Wi-Fi connectivity range, it will sync with Google Photos, it will sync with Dropbox, and it will sync with OneDrive. So I have my photos in three different places, two of which are full resolution. Maybe this replaces the OneDrive sync.
Or it could just augment it. It depends. Everyone has different needs, so it's okay. I don't know. I don't need it, but I understand the need for it.
Mary Jo, will you be using the Microsoft Photo app?
No, because the way I get pictures to myself, I do it the old-fashioned way. I email it myself.
Please say
I thought you were going to say I take it to the photo mat and they run it through the machine.
Right.
I get an envelope of photos,
pen of which is
a photo print of it. I bring it home and then I take a photo of the photo print.
I just either email it to myself or I send it to myself electronically some way.
You are the reason that Microsoft has spent 20 years trying to make this stuff easier.
I know.
And you just refuse to move along with
You know what? It works. It just works.
It's like my dad used to share photos via PowerPoint. This was how we did it.
Oh, yes. I would love those.
You get like a PowerPoint attachment and it would be just photos. It's like, Dad, there are 150 different ways to do this. And this one's about 147.
And you know what? I don't really need to send myself photos that often. Yeah. So I guess that's why. It's like I don't print that much anymore. I don't send myself photos.
There should be a thing on your phone where you send an email to yourself and it's a photo. And the prompt that comes up from Outlook or whatever you're using says, it's just a dialogue box that says, just stop. and then you hit okay. It
I do. That's how I do it. Sorry.
All right. Let's move from photos to something that I think Mary Jo is truly passionate about. And that is gaming on Windows.
As we know me.
This has me excited. There's a new game bar. And I actually kind of like it. I think Microsoft's in the right direction here.
I do too.
I love the functionality that it adds in the Fall Creators Update, especially when I'm trying to record virtual reality sessions. But now they're going to upgrade it even more. What are they giving me that I don't already have?
I have no idea. Because it's just a prototype. It's just a kind of a picture. In fact, here's the problem with this thing. A, it looks too good, right? You know, it's not going to look like that.
No.
But the other issue is those tiny little circles, the tiny buttons, you can't press those with your finger. Now, I know you're playing a game. You're probably using a mouse or whatever. But this UI is not scalable. Like I think they're going to have, you know, we'll change this. But I like where it's going because it's getting bigger and it's taking up more of the screen. And if you use like any overlay type system, if you use something like the NVIDIA stuff where you Alt-Z or whatever it is to bring up the NVIDIA control panel, if you want to record, do whatever it is. I think the bigger, the better. I like the notion of a thing that is like a dashboard. And it also suggests that they're adding a lot more functionality to it, although we don't really see a lot of it there, that it's going to require that extra on-screen real estate. Because, the current thing is just like a little 4 or 5 inch bar or whatever. It's small. So I think it's pretty. It's interesting because it's hidden in there. It's in the new build. It's not, that's not what comes up when you type WinKey plus G or whatever, but hopefully sometime soon, something like that is what will come up. I'm curious, unless I get A/B tested out of it, I'm never going to get over this.
they should make you the last person to get this.
I'm curious to see this. So it looks.
If I get it and you don't get it, I'll let you know.
There's something like, you can like type WinKey plus G over your notepad window and then send me a screenshot.
Exactly.
Well, yep. I do like the fact that they are promoting the broadcast side. So they've recognized this is actually a killer feature that Microsoft can offer in the Win bar, in the game bar. And that is, well, why not give me granular control of which services I'm streaming to, make it really easy for me to start a session. And then I do have a reason to use it. I mean, this could be a fantastic broadcasting platform, not just for gamers, Mary Jo, by the way, for anyone who wants to use
it. They should turn it into a complete screencasting platform that works across non-game as well.
I mean, I wondered if they were going to do that. I did.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
I think they are. It does make sense.
That's they're probably just figuring out how to do it right now. But you can bring
game bar over any window. It doesn't have to be a game. Yeah. They don't actually sense that or whatever.
So if you want to broadcast your notepad, I mean,
exactly.
I'm sure you'd have
a live blog, Mary Jo taking notes at a Microsoft event. She just misspelled that.
That would be interesting. Instead of live tweeting, people will just click and you're live typing, live notepad.
There's nothing we can
live notepadding.
I think this is an untapped industry, Mary Jo.
It's called notecasting.
Ooh, nice.
Yep.
All right, let's go to something a bit more productive, specifically something that I think a lot of us have been waiting for a while, and that is The Office on Chromebook. I don't know about you, but I have recently, gone all in on Chromebooks. I bought two of them. I gave one to my mother, one to my father. I have one for myself here at The Office. We've got the Acer R13s.
That's the convertible flip-around.
Convertible. Yeah. Costs about $350. Lasts for 12 hours on a charge, touchscreen. Mm-hmm. Actually, really nice construction. Not cheap, not plasticky. Good keyboard, good touchpad. But the fact that I can now run Windows apps natively, not in a browser, I like that. What's the deal with this?
This is a very suspicious and odd story. Because the reason that I say it, well, I guess I shouldn't have expected Microsoft to make a big deal out of this, since it's indirectly directly helping their competitor, Google, right? But Chrome Unboxed has been kind of monitoring it. Does every Chromebook now get Office, or only some? Because it seemed like some were getting the apps and some weren't. But as of this week, they said it seems like almost everyone is getting at least some of the Office apps now from the Google Play Store. I asked Microsoft for comment on this, by the way, and so far they haven't been able to come up with a comment, which is kind of interesting. I'm not sure what they're going to say ultimately about it. Like, yeah, we meant to do it, or we didn't mean to do it. And the thing to keep in mind, though, is a lot of people are like, oh, I can just get Office for free now. Well, you can't get it for free.
No, you cannot.
Because if you have a device with a screen over 10.1 inches, you have to have an Office 365 subscription to truly use Office. So, you know, these apps are in the Play Store for most Chromebook users, it seems, but you have to have a subscription to actually use them in a constructive way.
So 1 year ago this month, Microsoft did publicly say that they would support and their Android mobile app versions of the Office apps on Chromebook when that capability, meaning the capability to run Android apps in the Play Store on Chrome OS, was shipping in final form. So interestingly,
is it though?
well, that's the thing. Not everywhere, right? So the Pixelbook, which shipped, I guess this month actually, was the first to ship out of the box with that native support with, you know, no beta, no preview, whatever. And that maybe that was what the what was holding it up, but you know, the rationale for the timing. They said at that time, again, this is a year ago, that you know, there are issues porting Android app or making Android apps run efficiently on Chrome OS, and so depending on the app, you have to do different things. And they said they would support that stuff. You know, you want to be able to type in text boxes and
But they also had a weird qualifier last year. They said on compatible devices, right?
Well,
and they never
the
really explained
Chromebooks that run
that.
Android. No, it's Chromebooks that run Android.
That was it? There was nothing else besides that? That was the qualifier? Yeah. Okay.
So I tested this on an Acer Chromebook for work. I have some of the Office apps, but not all of them. It's kind of strange. Like I have, off the top of my head, I think it's Word, Excel, OneNote, which, it doesn't matter. OneNote and Outlook. But I don't have PowerPoint.
That's odd.
I don't know why. but whatever.
Did they bundle in interesting access? Because I mean, you need access on a Chromebook.
No, there's no access. no, it's whatever was available on Android would be the ultimate list of stuff that would be there. But there's an interesting kind of conversation to be had around this because it's not just Microsoft apps, but if we just keep it to Microsoft apps, you know, you get into a situation where you might have web-based apps that do the same thing, and then you have these Android-based apps, in which do you choose? You know, and for web-based apps, they don't actually have apps in like the Chrome Web Store or anything like that, but you can browse to Office Online and access the web-based versions of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and probably, in Outlook.com and, Outlook on the web and that kind of thing. And so it's kind of strange, you know, because this is a hybrid system, you know, which do you use? The apps that I looked at, you know, they run full screen, obviously. They work keyboard and mouse, obviously. They seem to work fine. They don't look special or different. I mean, they look a lot like the, you know, the mobile Windows apps as well. And these aren't great examples because you could have something like Spotify, for example, is something that does have a web app and an Android app. And you can run the Android apps as little phone apps in floating windows on your Chromebook screen next to floating web windows for, you know, full screen apps or whatever. And you get into this kind of goofy thing. And I think for a lot of people, it's like apps are apps. But the problem is you might have two apps with the exact same name in your, they don't call it start menu, but whatever the start menu is called. And which is which, and which, how do you choose, and how do you know which is what, you know, it's kind of an interesting complexity,
dilemma.
You know, I think for normal people.
That's like Skype, right? Like when you have a machine that can support the various versions of Skype, you're like, okay, which one is this one, right?
Yeah,
like,
and actually Skype's a good example because without Android apps, Skype is borderline useless on Android. You can run the web-based version of Skype, which provides for text messaging only, but now you can run the Android version of Skype, and theoretically, I've not tried this, but I could do this podcast with that. It's the full thing. It does video. It does everything. So that in that case, I guess maybe the choice is obvious, but in some cases, it's not.
Yeah.
This was really the missing link for me getting Chromebooks for my parents because they already do most of their work in browsers. They're fully invested in the cloud. That's where their email is. That's where all their entertainment is. A Chromebook can do all that. It can watch Netflix. It can watch Amazon video. The fact that I can now say, oh, by the way, this runs Word, which is the one program from the office that you still use, that's perfect. And it means that I can give them a computer that I know is not going to get infected. No matter what they do, no matter what sites they visit, they're not going to install something on it that's going to be stealing their information. And I can administer it from a remote location for an incredibly low price point. So that's That's worth it for me.
It's interesting. Part of the justification for Windows 10S is that Microsoft knows from its telemetry data that Windows users spend over 50% of their time using Windows in a web browser.
Yep.
It's, you know, that's just true of people in general. I mean, I think that's, you know, an interesting justification for Chromebooks.
Yeah, it works. And so is the experience any different? Is there any ever a time that you were using that you said, oh, I'm definitely on a Chromebook because I don't have this feature?
No, I mean, no. So I have experimented in the past with running these apps on Windows as well, because obviously on Windows we have the full-blown Office 2016 apps, and then we have these mobile apps if you're on Windows 10. You know, they're limited, but they're also simpler and probably more attuned to what the average user needs. Mary Jo's right. You know, she mentioned, for example, that, and this is the point of the article I wrote about this, which is that, you know, if you buy a Chromebook, you can access Google services for free. No problem. If you buy a Chromebook, you can access Microsoft's Office 365 services if you pay for it. You know, yeah. And I think they need to fix that. There needs to be a free tier, because otherwise they just don't compete. But as far as the usability of the apps, I do have an Office 365 account. I mean, it works exactly as you would expect. It works fine. And I wrote that article using that, for example. And it's, yeah, it works great. There's no problem at all.
Mary Jo, any temptation to move over to a Chromebook?
You know, I'm not kidding. I flirt with this idea regularly because I totally could live on a Chromebook with the very minimal needs I have, except Notepad. But
wait, no, there's an Android Notepad app.
I'm guessing there are some decent app. Text editors on Android.
I know. I'm kidding when I say that. But, like, you know, that's why I got to try a Windows 10S laptop, I'm sure, because I've said publicly before, like, I'm the person who could use a Chromebook and be fine with it. Right. And now that Office is there, and I don't use Office a lot, but every once in a while I'm forced to do a PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
Those
are always
once
the worst days, aren't they?
When you have to do a worst. Or have to use an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah. Well, you could get away with the web-based versions, right? I mean,
I could.
And
I could.
That's true on Windows too. I mean, if you didn't want to install Office, I mean, you could kind of get away with it. You pay for Office 365, don't you, or do you?
I have the version of Office 365 that doesn't include the apps.
Oh, I see.
Because I don't use them enough. So I do need to use PowerPoint or Excel, I typically use the web version.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about Windows and other devices, though, because we've got, of course, we've got Office on the Chromebook now, but we've got Android devices in the Windows Store? Wait, hold on. Yeah. The world is upside down.
The world is topsy-turvy these days.
I know.
Imagine if you were like a Windows guy and you went into a coma 5 years ago and then you came out and you were like, wait, what's happening here?
Yep.
Now, we've actually got Windows Store selling Galaxy Note 8s. Is this good?
Yeah,
is
and
this bad?
Note 8s and that Razer phone as well. And I expect that comp to go up and up. The interesting thing, though, is that if you look at, you can do this right now. If you go to the Microsoft Store and look at the listing for any of these phones, there's only a handful right now, but if you look at them, the thing they advertise up front and center on all of them is the Microsoft launcher, which will tell you is available in the Google Play Store, which it is. But this kind of speaks to the problem that I actually alluded to earlier, which is, you know, Microsoft, for whatever reason, can't put that launcher on the phone. You know they want to. That would change the experience pretty dramatically. And it's funny, I don't think they should sell Windows Mobile phones, but I do think you could make a case for Microsoft selling a rebranded whatever Android phone and putting all of their stuff on it, you know, so that the Microsoft launcher was the default launcher, right? Not the Google launcher or whatever.
But they can't scroll do down that a little out of the
bit.
Box.
No, just scroll down. Yeah, there you go. So, no, they can't put it in there, you know, so... Earlier this year, when Microsoft announced their agreement with Samsung to sell the S8 and the S8 Plus at their stores, I think at that time it was just retail stores, I was wondering if that was going to be part of it. Back then they had the Arrow launcher. They have various lock screen replacements. They obviously have a keyboard. They have a digital assistant. They've got all this stuff. But they really can't preload any of that stuff. Some OEMs will preload some Office apps, OneDrive, things like that. But the stuff that, you know, you can replace basically all the key components of Android, and you as a user can do that. But, you know, Microsoft's sitting there saying, you know, we have all the pieces here. Like, it'd be interesting if they could cell phones like that.
But I mean, the old Windows phone wound isn't even healed yet. They can't really dive back in, can they?
You got to rip off the
skin.
Why not just partner with somebody, though?
That would do it, too. Well, okay, because by the way, I think Microsoft, they were going to. Remember? What was that? Cyanogen or whatever?
Yep, right, Cyanogen.
I think their plan was to do that with those guys.
Yeah.
And they went out of business.
And then they died. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were heading in that direction.
Yeah, I cannot imagine Microsoft selling a Microsoft branded Android phone.
Well, okay. It doesn't have to be Microsoft branded. I mean, but in other words, some phone makers are taking their phones and bringing them to Android One, and Google can sell them through their store, and they can, or I don't know how they sell them. They can put them on Google Fi, whatever.
That makes sense.
Microsoft could do that. You know, I mean, I sort of thought, you know, I can see why Samsung wouldn't want to do it. They're the biggest phone maker in the world. But what about HTC, which is struggling, frankly? Or what about these smaller companies like Blue or Z or whatever, the companies no one's ever heard of, and say, guys, you know, let's make a special version of your phone. Yep. Put a little Windows logo on it or whatever. It'll be nice.
That makes sense. I can't see Microsoft ever going back in with a Microsoft phone that happens Mary to Joe, be an
it's,
Android
it's
phone.
Like riding a bike.
I mean, even all those Andromeda rumors, right? Like that thing's not really a phone. Like we're thinking of phones, the Microsoft Andromeda hardware. That seems more like a foldable tablet that happens to have telephony capabilities.
Some new surface form factor, and it will be a chance for them to come out and champion the fact that this is what we do, and you know, whatever. And oh, by the way, it makes phone calls. You know.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, that's the other part of it, which is why does it have to be a phone? They just want to be on mobile. They just want that second screen. They've got that with the Surface.
I don't know. Tablets are a little tough, but I would say even a tablet type device, which arguably Andromeda sort of is a tablet type thing. Mm-hmm. These are devices that sell in tens of millions of units, you know, easily. I mean, phones sell in hundreds of millions or can. You know, even a medium successful kind of mobile device could give them a nice bounce, because right now what they're kind of over reliant on the PC market, which is relatively small by the comparison, you know, compared to mobile devices.
Yeah.
Well, they can't partner with a manufacturer who's going to sell a $1,200 phone with Windows enabled. I think you're right. I think they go for one of the smaller manufacturers. They approach OnePlus One and say, hey, you know what?
That would be amazing.
You guys are, you're a small company. You operate in very light margins, and yet people like your phone.
Let's go to a Chinese company and saying, hey, we understand there are kind of regulatory IP related reasons why you can't do business in the United States. Well, guess what? We own a lot of patents, and you know,
and we have stores.
How about that? Oh, it's just a thought. I mean, I assume
if
they're
do
pursuing
it,
things.
If they do this, I hope they have a premium offering and a budget offering. I hope they have both.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. Oh, totally. Yeah. It can't just be a flagship phone.
No.
Well, I mean, I do like that pricing spacing. Give me the $500 phone. Give me the $1,000 tablet. Give me the $1,500 to $2,000 laptop. Yeah. Right. Yep. That's how you space it. But is that going to work?
Let's do it. Let's go into business. Let's make this happen.
We've got a physical location here. All we need is a phone manufacturer. I hear Nokia is actually pretty cheap now. We could probably buy that.
Oh, man. Oh, that, you know, wouldn't that be full circle if they got Nokia to build the phone and it was an Android phone? Oh, man.
No, we're definitely not.
We're just kidding. We're just kidding.
Now, when we come back, do you mind having a discussion about the Microsoft headquarters? Because this last week, there's been a little bit of news, and it's actually, I find it kind of exciting. I've been up to the campus a couple of times. I'd love to see what they do with it. Can we save that discussion?
Yes. I think this would be a good conversation for the people who work at Microsoft, because they're going to be stuck in traffic for 2 hours because of all the extra employees coming there, so they'll need something to listen to.
They'll need a phone.
And on their phone,
And we'll be talking about that in just a bit. But first, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank a sponsor. of this episode of Windows Weekly. Now, let me ask you a question. Did you like the last time that you went in for a mortgage? I mean, isn't that fun? You try to put together your financial life, maybe gather a couple of receipts, a couple of pay stubs, put it into a banker's box, bring it over to a bank where some rando gets to tell you whether or not you're worthy of a loan from his or her fine financial institution. Well, of course you didn't. It's a horrible experience. It's one that hasn't really kept up with the times. And that's why we're so happy to have Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans as a sponsor of Windows Weekly. Now, Rocket Mortgage figured out that the mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why they created the easiest, the most simple, the most powerful mortgage process currently on the planet. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. No double talk, no quick speak, no fine print. They're going to explain exactly what you're getting yourself into, exactly what the terms are, and exactly what Rocket Mortgage can do for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. No more dragging banker's boxes through a door with your old carbon copies. It's all digital, as it should be in this day and age. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. And then with those calculations, based on your income, your assets, and your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and then find the one that's just right for you. Now, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, you can apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. That's rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Windows Weekly. Now, this is a fun one. Evidently, Microsoft is having a little bit of a growing pains issue at their campus. And they're going to tear part of it down to rebuild. Who's got this story?
I can give you the basics on it. So Microsoft's shareholders meeting was today. And one of the announcements they made in conjunction with that is the renovation of their campus. It's going to be a multi-billion dollar effort that's going to take probably 5 to 7 years. So if you've ever been to the Microsoft campus, it's this big, sprawling, kind of older-looking thing. Like, the new buildings are very modern, but the original buildings that are shaped like X's, like right. Buildings, I think, 1 through 10, very old, very easy to get lost because every floor looks identical. I've been lost in there a few times. and so what they're going to do is take where those buildings 1 through 10 are, and they're going to raise them completely and build a bunch of new buildings in there. They're going to build a bridge connecting their campus west side and the east side. They're doing a whole lot of different things. They're even going to build a light rail stop right near the Microsoft campus, which is going to be amazing. Right now, when I go to the Microsoft campus from Seattle, the way I go is I take the 545 bus. And the reason I do that is, which Paul will get into more, the driving there is pretty horrible. Yeah. And
oh my God. Yeah.
When they finally extend light rail over to that side, the east side, and have this stop, this is going to be fantastic. There's going to be all kinds of stores. There's even going to be this big open air plaza where 12,000 people can come and meet and like watch presentations on a big screen. So it's a very big makeover. They're making it very bike-friendly. Part of the campus won't even be accessible to cars. All the parking lots are going underground. So if you've been to the Microsoft campus ever, by 2023, when this is fully implemented, they hope, it's going to look very different from how it looks now.
Mm. Which is
the one part I wonder about is Lake Bill in the old part of the campus.
Oh, like, there's some very that. They'll definitely retain that.
I would think they would, right? Yeah. But there's like a couple of people said like, oh, those old buildings. Yeah, they were old, but it's like kind of historical too.
They're also historic in a way, yeah. They're kind of cross-shaped and awkward layouts.
Yep.
I mean, they were industrial. It was an industrial time. They were making a headquarters. It makes sense. Yep. And yes, they are historical because it's Microsoft, but
yeah.
They're not great buildings.
No, they're not. But they're fine. No. I don't know. They're quirky and fun. The issue is that when they were built, the zoning codes or whatever in Redmond specified they can only be so high. And so they're not very tall. They're like two stories, I think. And now some of the newer buildings are three or four stories. That's about it. You know, it's as high as you can go. So it leads to its own kind of sprawl. You know, Microsoft's campus is really a set of campuses now, right? Because they have additional campuses in the air like Red West, Millennium, and so forth. And, you know, you shuttle bus between them, and Mary Jo's gotten into some shenanigans doing that, as I recall.
what?
But you can see here, like, you know, and they're split by the 520 there. The highway that you see going in the middle splits the two sides of the main campus. But, yeah, you know, the big issue there is traffic. And I've approached the Redmond campus from every conceivable direction. I stay with friends. I have been doing this for 15, 18 years, whatever. These guys at different times have lived in Seattle, north of Seattle, south of Seattle, Redmond, Bellevue, I mean, everywhere. And, you know, someone who works at Microsoft, it must be a nightmare, but even me just kind of short term, you know, you have to kind of plot out the day because if you don't leave for work at a certain time,
right,
or if you don't get out of the office by a certain time, you're stuck where you are. You literally are going to wait hours to get out of there. Yeah. They did construction on the 520 floating bridge, which is much nicer, but, you know, still kind of a...
bottleneck.
Sorry. Yeah, bottleneck. Thank you. And it's just, you know, it's tough. They're going to bring in 8,000 additional employees, you know.
I know.
And so hopefully over time with the trains, the trams or whatever, this won't be as bad. But I just don't see an end to the gridlock there. Not to mention the high prices with real estate, the congestion, the general congestion of the area. It's such a pretty place and it's just been overrun with Microsoft people. Who have a lot of money, generally speaking, and they've kind of pushed out, you know, a lot of the people who might have lived there otherwise. So I hope there's some plan for that stuff.
Yeah, right now there's 47,000 employees who work in the Redmond area. They're going to add 8,000 to that.
Yeah, it's a big number for that. You know, it is. That's a big jump.
It's a medium-sized city that commutes to that area every day.
There's a lot to this story, by the way. There's a lot of goofy. If you think about Seattle, Seattle's the main city in the area and always kind of has been. Typically, the commute works that people live out in the suburbs and they drive into the city. And in Seattle's case, that means you drive west from the suburbs that are on the east side of Lake Washington, you know, Bellevue, Redmond, whatever. But Microsoft happened. And all of a sudden, the commutes were happening in the opposite direction. And the infrastructure was not set up for this, nor was it set up for the size of the population. And so Bellevue has turned into a city in its own right. It's got great restaurants. It's kind of a neat place now. Bellevue was always kind of a nothing place. But thanks to Microsoft, largely, I would say, now it's kind of a destination. But there's just a real sprawl that occurs there. And it's tough because throughout my life, I've been going out there for 22 years. Mary Jo's been going out there probably a lot longer than that. I like it there a lot. You lived out there. And I could imagine living out there except, you know, the high prices and the congestion. I mean, it makes it kind of untenable. I want to get in my car and go someplace, not get in my car and listen to this podcast, you know, or whatever. I don't know.
And, you know, for me, the biggest regret. So I've watched Microsoft build out their campus over the years. Like when I moved to Seattle, it was 1991, I think. And, it was a fairly manageable size. Right now, the Microsoft campus is 125 different buildings. And if you've ever been there, it's not like they've added some more maps and more directional signs inside the campus, but there used to be none. And you'd have to know, like, the buildings that were consecutively numbered weren't next to each other. You had to have kind of a mental map of how this
works. Some buildings don't exist.
Yeah. So for me, like, when I see this diagram of how they're going to redo it, I'm thinking, wow, like, all that mental map, all those mental maps I have in my head are going to be obsolete, basically.
and they've done a lot of construction over the years. I don't remember all the building numbers, but I remember when I almost got killed at the Microsoft campus due to some construction stuff. They were building building 33, which is where the Windows team moved into. And they moved, I don't remember where they moved, 12 or something, one of the triangle or cross buildings. But all the construction, there's no parking in this place to save your life. There's nothing there. And during construction, there was negative nothing. There was no parking. So I was picking someone up from Microsoft and I pulled into the parking lot. There was no parking spaces, obviously. So I pulled over to the side next to some construction stuff. There was a huge storm going on at the time. And I don't remember what caused this exactly. It was a long time ago, so I don't know if he called me on the phone or whatever it was, but I moved forward 10 feet. And as I did, a gigantic, like not a redwood, but one of those huge trees they have there, came crashing down exactly where my car had been sitting as part of the storm. It was an enormous tree. It would have destroyed the car and probably me in it, depending on where it hit it. Mm-hmm. And I literally saw this thing happen in my rearview mirror. Like it made the light. It was like a Jurassic Park sound, you know, behind me. And yeah, and it was because of the construction. So good stuff.
I just want to throw something in here. This, by the way, Alex, if you go to my computer, when they're building the Apple campus, they were saying how it's the largest headquarters in the world now. It's this. Mm-hmm. This is the same scale. This is the Boeing headquarters.
Yeah.
So, neither Apple nor Microsoft are going to have the largest. They don't have bragging rights. Large campuses are fun all to by themselves. Actually, Boeing has a transit system inside the campus.
Yeah, it's like Disney World.
Look at Amazon, right? Amazon's going to build headquarters too because they don't have room anymore in Seattle.
That's another part of the story, right? Because Microsoft kind of, it's like, this doesn't have anything to do with Amazon. Just kidding. they're like, we think one headquarters is enough, right? A little jab at Amazon. Amazon threw out their little offer to the world. We're looking for tax cuts. Who can do the best job? And Amazon's going to go someplace. I think it might be outside of Denver, I think is one of the big choices. It could be somewhere in Canada, whatever, it doesn't matter. But they're going to destroy that place, right? So if you want to see what the next Redmond is, look at whatever little poor little town in Colorado, wherever it is that Amazon heads to, because this is what's going to happen to it.
Right. Now, we do have a story that came out of the chat room. I'm sorry, you scrolled off the screen. Someone did mention that Microsoft Edge is now available on Android. Out.
Dear God, stop ruining my pick.
Oh!
What is wrong with you?
Let's bring it up again. Edge,
you know what?
Android.
You can finish this podcast without me.
But you didn't hear that. You didn't hear that. Erase that until we get towards the end of the show. I'm just saying, sets on Android.
You know what? Let's just do the pick now. I'm getting tired of this.
I think you should.
Well, actually, Paul, go ahead and jump into the pick.
Right. So the app pick of the week, and this is going to be a surprise to everybody, is Microsoft Edge for Android and iOS. I've actually used this pick in the past, but it's really interesting to me how quickly this thing is being updated on mobile. I mean, you can make the argument it needs to be updated. Obviously, it was in a preview. It's incomplete form and all that kind of stuff. But there's a nice contrast there, right, between Edge on mobile and Edge on Windows 10, where it's kind of stuck on the Windows 10 update schedule. The most recent update on Android takes it out of preview, and it adds a dark theme, which is like, it doesn't sound like a big deal. But when you kind of compare it to where it was when it first launched, it all of a sudden is very full featured, and you can make a compelling argument. If you spend your day in Windows, it's not such a horrible idea, especially if you're going to use Edge, obviously, if you're going to use Edge on Windows. This browser makes tons of sense on mobile. And one of the big things that puts it over the top is that they're using the underlying web rendering engine that's on that platform. So that means Safari on iOS and Chrome on Android. And that takes the onus off of Microsoft to work on that stuff. They can just work on the end user functionality.
Right.
So you get all the cross-device sync, you get password sync. And you get all the cross compatibility with Continue One PC, which, like I said earlier, is very seamless in this browser. So, if you want to use Edge, but you kind of found, some issues and reasons not to, I would just say look at it again, because this thing has been evolving very fast. It's really, really nice on mobile.
I mean, for me, Edge has always been one of the browser choices I've got. It used to be I had Edge, Firefox and Chrome, and now I'm down to Chrome and Edge. More and more, I find there are times I want to go to Edge. Edge just does certain things much better. Even for something like Google Drive, Edge scrolls much better than Chrome, which is kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah, so, right, there you go. I actually use Firefox now, by the way, in kind of an ironic or hypocritical way. I have started using that across platform. There is something to be said for using the same browser everywhere when you can do that. And that was a missing link for Edge. And I think, it obviously puts it over the top here for people who do want to use Edge on Windows, that you could use it on mobile as well.
I have it on my Android.
Yeah.
Wait, so you had the beta or you had the official app?
The official. Mm-hmm. And I have the dark theme.
Yep. It's pretty.
I haven't downloaded it yet. I'll give it a try. I do want to see.
They've updated it twice just this week. You know, yeah. Like, I mean, it's pretty impressive. You know, they've updated Edge on Windows twice this year. You know, that's true.
I do want to see if the Continue on PC feature works as seamlessly as you've suggested, because I find myself.
Yeah, it's great. There's a button right in the center of the toolbar. You tap it. It brings up your list of PCs. You can send it right away. It will pop up on the screen. You can send it later, and then you get a notification on all of your PCs, and you can go anytime you want and access it later. It's nice.
That's very cool. There have been a couple of times where I've been on my phone, and I find a story that I actually want to use for one of the shows. And so I bookmark it, which will bookmark sync to my Chrome browser on my desktop.
Yeah, I save it to Pocket, which is my version of Mary Jo emailing photos to herself. You know, it's like, it really is. It's the same thing. Like, I'm just going to access it somewhere else. You know?
So I just click continue on PC and it will pop up on my Edge browser in my PC.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll give it a try today.
It does work. It's quick too.
Not bad. Yep. I'm sorry we kept stepping on your app pick. It's what I do. I'm sorry. I don't read down to the bottom of the doc. I like it to be a surprise to me as it is a surprise to our audience.
I'm going to choose to believe that. All right. So the tip of the week is kind of nebulous. If you were listening in earlier, I didn't actually have one as the show started. We see these studies from time to time, and I guess there was just another one because everyone's writing about it. But more than one study has shown that if you're recording information by hand using a pen or pencil and paper, you actually retain it better than if you type it into a computer. And that's true whether you're using a tablet with like a glass surface, or if you're using an active pen on a glass surface, whether it's a tablet or a PC, whatever. And for people who are students, especially, but potentially for people like me and Mary Jo as well, who need to take notes, you know, at industry events or whatever, there is some concern to that. And I went to the post office today. I run into this every once in a while, like I have to write a check maybe, or in this case, I had to fill out a form, which literally is my name and address and someone else's name and address. And I'm telling you, my hand hurts before I'm done writing. I can't, the quality of my writing goes right off right through the toilet. It's awful. Like the woman at the post office, I actually asked me what was wrong. And I was like, I can't write anymore. I don't know what's going on. But I do know what's going on. What's going on is I've been sitting in front of a computer for 25 years and I've almost lost the ability to write. So I'm kind of, I'm thinking about this thing and the studies that show that you don't retain stuff unless you actually write it by hand. And I'm thinking, well, how do you fix this? You know, how does someone like me fix it? Because I have the second problem, which is that I can't write. And I'm actually thinking about getting something that actually started a different story, which is that Moleskine, who makes those awesome little black notebooks, has their own kind of digital tools, right? And they have these digital pens. You can write on the regular notebook and it goes into notes. And we've seen these things, you know, Evernote does this and there's all kinds of different solutions for this kind of thing. That smart writing set is now compatible with Windows 10. They actually have a native Windows 10 app. So they have one obviously for Android, they have one for iOS, and now they have one for Windows 10. And what I'm thinking is, maybe I should start training myself to write in this kind of a notebook using, it's a digital pen, but it's a pen. It writes in ink and it you know, writes on paper, and sort of retrain myself to write. And in a sense, I will achieve two things, which hopefully includes better retention of the information I'm listening to, and also the ability to write a check without my hand wanting to collapse. It's a little expensive at $200, maybe a Christmas present. I'm thinking about it. This is something I do kind of want to do. I will say from the perspective of recording information and whatnot, if I do this, I would want to augment it with maybe audio recording the thing, depending on what the event is, right? Obviously, it's a Microsoft event. It will be recorded for me. But one of the reasons I sit and type and take notes during meetings is, or maybe interviews or whatever, is I'm trying to record exactly what that person said. And it's not good enough for me with my shaky hand to get out every third word and then start crying because my hand hurts. So I'm going to have to kind of solve that. But it's something to think about. I mean, it is an interesting issue.
Do either of you have a signature that is legible to anyone but you?
I do. My signature is very legible.
My signature is a curly. It looks like an outline of Snoopy's head.
Yeah, I don't do my signature anymore. When I sign for credit cards, I draw a little boat.
Yeah, I've been doing this for years. Really? I not 50% of the time, but some percentage of the time, it's happened this week. I'll give my card to a person at a register or whatever, and they'll look at it and say, "Do I need to check your ID?" Because they think that they can't. They like, this is clearly not a signature. Is it telling me something? You know, it's like, no.
I want to weigh in on one quick thing on this writing thing, because I took handwritten notes my entire career until about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and I have finally trained myself to take fast type notes. I'm not going back. I think you do retain things very well when you handwrite them, but I think I can take notes so much faster typing that I don't really care if I retain it. Because I can always go back and look at my typed
and it's searchable. Yeah. That's what's nice. I can search through my notes. I'm the same way. I can type at least six times faster than I can write. At least.
Even more. Yeah.
No, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus I don't usually cry when I type.
And when I do write, I print. I don't use cursive.
I print also. Yep. Yeah. I used to take shorthand. I actually knew how to take shorthand, but I don't remember it anymore.
I did shorthand when I was in high school and college because I did debate. And so all the notes were done shorthand. I just coached a team here in San Francisco. They all have notebooks now. None of them write anymore. Everything's on tablet or notebook.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, the pictures for these studies always shows a classroom at a typical college where there's 150 students, 135 of which are looking at a MacBook Air. And, you know, are they retaining anything?
Well, this goes back to our pre-show conversation, Paul. Is there any value to retaining anymore? If I can just recall it on a device, do I have to retain it?
Mm. This is turning into an Isaac Asimov story. And I got to tell you, I am not comfortable with this future.
You know, though, the reason this comes up a lot, of course, is Microsoft is looking for more reasons for people to use the pen, right? And so they love these studies, right? They're like, look, you should be using the pen, right?
Well, but even a pen on a tablet is worse than a pen on paper for some reason. Duplicating the tactile feel that you get off of paper is obviously a key concern for these guys. And I think that might be part of it.
Also, I want to see how the study was actually set up. How did they choose the people for the study?
Right. Sure.
Because, I mean, there's an entire generation of students that I deal with on an almost daily basis who they couldn't write to save their lives. They don't write anything.
Part of it might be the distraction environment that every digital device is, and that what's really happening is you have the expectation of being constantly entertained. And if your mind starts drifting over there, maybe I can play some Candy Crush game or whatever it is, or see what's going on ESPN.com or whatever. No one's interested in a restrictive device that only has Notepad on it or whatever and nothing else, right? I don't know. I think we're going through the wormhole. It's over. We're going to be stuck to feeding tubes, and it's going to be like the Matrix.
Wow.
Well, let's go to the Matrix, straight to the enterprise pick of the week. Mary Jo Foley, tell me about location services with TomTom.
I know, right? That's an odd one. Excuse me. So Azure location-based services is now in preview as of this week. And initially, it's being powered by TomTom's online APIs. Microsoft's plan is to add other location technologies in the future to it. But what this is a service in Azure that provides things like mapping, search, routing, traffic, time zones, all these kinds of things that would matter if you're doing asset tracking, transportation fleets, or even autonomous driving, right? So this is a very early version of this, and Microsoft's definitely positioning it as something that will be key to their IoT and their connected car strategies. But still interesting that they've already got a preview out on this, and I bet we'll hear more. I would just guess we're going to hear more at Consumer Electronics Show on this because of the emphasis in that show these days about autonomous cars and autonomous driving.
I get the concept, but why TomTom?
I know. That is a good question, and I don't know why they went with them as the initial partner. Maybe there was no one else to go with. I don't know. What else can I tell you? It's going to be generally available in calendar 2018, they said. And it can be used as a standalone service or can be integrated with other Azure services. And pricing will be consumption-based pricing. That's all I know. I don't know why they picked TomTom.
I mean, TomTom is probably a better deal than anyone else they could have chosen. And and actually, TomTom does have quite a bit of established resources in terms of actual mapping data. That's one of the things that they did incredibly well. They're not buying their data from anybody else. They actually created their own data set. So I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft did a deal with HERE, you know, the mapping people a while back. I don't know if they're also going to integrate that data with this. I would think so. Because a year ago, they did a thing they called a world graph, which was a graph of all kinds of this kind of location-based information. And the partners, when they first announced that, were TomTom, HERE, and Esri. Those were all companies they were working with to build out a geographic index. So maybe those are the next two companies they'll add as partners on this.
Yeah. And I mean, location-based services right now, if you really want to do it on a enterprise scale, it's Google. You go with Google because even Amazon doesn't have location-based down. So if Microsoft can provide this with their Azure business plans, that's actually a significant advantage.
Definitely. And they've been doing a lot of things with like long-haul trucking is one of their big showcase kinds of verticals. So this obviously would fit in very well with that as well.
Right. Something else that might fit in is our project code name of the week. And I'm so, so happy that this involves the Xbox because Mary Jo, as we all know, you're a big fan.
Noted fan. Yep.
Noted fan. Yes. So, you know, we were talking at the start of the show about sets and about timeline. Well, a lot of the technology that's underneath the covers of these things is something Microsoft talked about for the first time publicly back at Build 2016. It was a code name that we still use now called Project Rome. And Project Rome actually did come out of Xbox. It used a lot of the Xbox smart glass technology, if you remember that product, which was the idea of like a second screen that would work with your Xbox. So if you were watching a movie, you could have who is that character? And you could be looking at a second screen and be able to get more information on things as they were happening on the big screen. So that the reason Rome is figuring in here is it's all about the handoff, right? Pick up where you left off, all that technology. It ties in with this Rome API. And in fact, today there was a community stand-up with Kevin Gallo for Windows 10, and he was talking up Rome big time about developers should be very cognizant of what's going on with Microsoft and Rome, and you really need to understand Rome if you want to understand where we're going with Windows. So I brought it out again as the code name of the week because it figures into so many things having to do with Windows 10 these days.
Right. So timeline is based off of Rome. Is sets?
You know, maybe just through the integration of timeline and sets that there'll be some component that'll draw on Rome, perhaps. But yeah, kind of interesting. Yep. When in Rome, use Rome.
Which, by the way, both of you are going to visit me when I'm there, right?
Yes.
I consider that invitation to be gold. I desperately would like to go back to Rome.
Me too.
I will have the key to the special sub basement. So
finally. The real Da Vinci Code.
When are you going?
When are you doing
September.
This?
September. So September 1st is the drop dead day. I have to be there.
Okay.
And is there a time frame for this?
How long I'll be there?
Yeah.
Somewhere between 1 and 40 years.
Okay. Yeah. So, somewhere between no time and infinity.
In infinity, right. It's Roman time. Roman time works differently.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and please come visit me.
That would be awesome. I would love to come.
I literally, this is a true story. I was just talking to my wife about Rome today.
Wow.
And I have received permission for two things. One, I will be building a studio on our campus so you can broadcast from Rome.
Oh, wow.
Two, I'm building a maker classroom for people around Rome. So it'll be fun.
So I don't know how long you're going to be there. Obviously, no one does, but the chances of me getting back to Rome are very high. Very high.
Well, you've got my contact information. And our house is literally a 3-minute walk to St. Peter's.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Do you have like a backdoor entrance? Because, you know, the line's there.
Actually, we do.
Speaking of like traffic in Redmond.
Yeah, no kidding.
The only thing worse than that is waiting in the line to get in St. Peter's.
If you were to bring it up on Google Maps, our campus is, it touches the Vatican walls.
So oh, that's amazing.
It's right there. If you look on Bing Max, it actually shows you a relief. So you can see my room. Yay.
Wow.
And as always, we have to end the show with the beer pick of the week. You know, I was just thinking the other day that there's not enough geese in my beer.
Who wouldn't be thinking that? So the beer pick of the week is a beer that traditionally comes out on Black Friday these days. It's from Goose Island. And they're really well known for their bourbon barrel aged beers. Every year they come out with a bourbon barrel aged stout. Bourbon County Stout. So I actually don't remember this that well because I was trying all the different years when I was trying it. So I was trying 2015 and 2016 and 2017. But I have to say the one that's out this year, 2017, is really, really good. It's roasty, it's chocolatey, it's got a really deep but mellow flavor. You're not like hit over the head with bourbon. So if you get to see it anywhere, and it has fairly wide distribution in the United States, Goose Island Bourbon County Stout 2017 is worth seeking out. There are a lot of variants of Bourbon County. There's coffee and there's the proprietor's release and all different kinds of things. But if you just get the basic Bourbon County Stout, I don't think you will be disappointed.
Wait a minute, Mary Jo, to get that bourbon flavor, is it just about the barrel that you fermented?
Yeah.
It's just
aged
oaky
in the bourbon barrel.
Okay.
Aged in there.
Oh, yep. So they aged it in a barrel that was already used
alcohol
for bourbon.
Strategy when you think about it. You know? No, it is. I mean, all kinds of alcohols do this. You know, age something in a different barrel, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're going to pick up the flavor of it. So, yeah.
You do.
Why not?
Yeah. The older ones, like 2015, man, it's very bourbony, even though all it was aged in a barrel. Very heavily taste of bourbon.
Now, I don't drink, but I gotta ask, right, could you get the same effect by pouring some bourbon into beer?
No, it wouldn't be the same. You know, some people try to take that shortcut, I think, with their bourbon stouts. They throw some bourbon in and say, hey, it tastes like an aged beer. It doesn't taste the same. You don't get the barrel.
It's not an infusion, it's a mix.
It's not. Yeah. It's not something I would seek out myself. I would go for the barrel.
And also, I think if I poured a bunch of bourbon into beer, Alex would probably strike me.
I think what you're making there is like a Tom Collins or a that kind of thing. Like just like a mixed drink, you know.
Oh, yeah. Is that one of those things where you put it into a shot glass and then drop the shot glass into the beer?
Kamikaze,
is that what it is? The sake in the beer? No, what's that called?
Yeah, it's something like when you mix like lemonade and
a Boilermaker?
Iced tea or whatever.
Like a shandy, you think?
Yeah.
There's all this terminology that surrounds beer that I just don't... I'm locked out of that world, Mary Jo.
You're participating vicariously, though.
Yes, yes. Well, I see your your stream of pictures, so I just assume that I'm I'm there with you in spirit.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I think that's it. I think... Wow, did we actually finish the show?
I think we did.
Oh, well...
It had to happen eventually.
It did. And Mary Jo, surprisingly, there wasn't a lot of gaming news. Normally, when it's Paul and I, we're at least going to...
Oh, well, so you've been gone for a while. There's been a lot of Xbox stuff lately. And in deference to Mary Jo's sanity, I thought we'd try to lay low a little bit.
Well, are you going to come to the Christmas party this year? Because we're going to be playing Xbox the entire night.
I don't know.
Call of Duty. It's going to be a Call
of Duty.
A 12-hour Call of Duty marathon.
Oh, good Lord.
That's just a day. That's like a day for me. Like a normal day.
Well, here we are at the end of the show with Paul Throd and Mary Jo Foley. Paul, of course, you need to tell the folks where they can find you when you're not here on Windows Weekly.
Well, Throd.com is probably the easiest place. And then I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/Throd. Throrott.
Anything in the cooking stage?
Yeah. So actually, next week I'm going to Hawaii for a Qualcomm event, and there's going to be a lot of news.
Well,
and
especially
I think
with
we're
all
doing a live show from
lawsuits
there
and the counter lawsuits. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is more technology related, hopefully, than that stuff. Just in time for Broadcom to buy them, because there's always a bigger fish.
I know. Right.
Now, you know the studio is next to Broadcom, right? I mean, they're literally our neighbors.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we could just go over.
Yeah. Right.
Mary Jo, where can people find you at the ZDNet All About Microsoft blog?
Surprisingly, it's allaboutmicrosoft.com, where you can find me. Also on Twitter, at Mary Jo Foley. I'm there every day, pretty much.
Which, by the way, are you proud of me? If the last three episodes, I have not called it the All About Android blog.
I am very proud of that.
I practice in front of the mirror every day.
Excellent
for 3 minutes.
Job. Yes.
That's it for this episode of Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley. Catch the show live on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific time, or watch it on demand at twit.tv/WW. I'm Father Robert Ballester, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Until the next time, have a great day and take your Windows Weekly.
I had to think about that one for a second.
Oh, there he is.